Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. Championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thank you so much for tuning in for a brand new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. And today, we're talking with a BYU coach. Happy to have my friend, assistant baseball coach for BYU baseball, Abe Alvarez. Abe, it's always good to see you. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Shep. Appreciate you having me on.
You bet. We got a lot to talk about. We're certainly going to talk a lot of baseball. You're the pitching coach for the BYU Cougars. How are you feeling heading into season number two here in Provo?
Feeling good. I think the big thing is we have a lot of young guys that are hungry, and that's always a positive because it pushes older guys, and that's always fun when there's hunger on the mound. It's a good thing.
Yeah. I know there's always pressure going into a year anyway. That's just the nature of the business. And whether it's outside pressure on you or self-inflicted pressure, there's always some sort of pressure. What type of pressure do you guys as a coaching staff feel heading into this first year in the Big 12?
I think the pressure is, you know, kind of the narrative is BYU good enough? You know, coming from the West Coast Conference, they didn't make the tournament last year. Are we good enough? I think that's always the question that people are trying to get an answer to. But at the end of the day, I don't feel pressure as an individual, and I don't think our staff does. It's more of a like, let's go. Like, we want to get going and kind of prove ourselves.
You've been doing this a while. What's your philosophy as a pitching coach? How do you like to handle guys?
I'm kind of, I don't want to say I'm laid back, but more of a, I want them to be their best pitching coach. I have answers and I'll have my opinion, but most of the time, it doesn't matter what I say unless they get it through their head and be like, I have to do this. And then I have to ask Gabe, am I doing it right or what can I do different? And that's always been my approach just because they'll end up being their best pitching coach.
Yeah.
If they want to play pro baseball, they're going to have to figure it out. Not that there's not coaches of pro baseball, but you're on an island in pro ball if you want to do it. And if they don't understand how to do it now, you know, they won't be able to help themselves later.
In the year and some change that I've gotten to know you and been around you, you are very low key. Have you always been that way? Has that always been your personality, even as a youngster growing up?
I believe so. I mean, I'm the baby of the family. I'm the youngest. I try not to cause too much havoc, even though I probably have throughout my career. There have been some things that have happened, but I don't know. The one thing I always come back to is be humble. If I'm not humble, if I think I'm too high, God will bring me down, you know, and if I'm too low, He'll lift me up. So if I could be humble and be at a good pace with just who I am, things will happen when they happen.
All right. Well, let's talk about your upbringing. You're from Southern California. You grew up in Maywood, I believe, until you were 8 or 9.
Correct.
And then you moved to the Inland Empire. You planted roots in Fontana, California. What was it like growing up in the Alvarez household?
A lot of Spanish, a lot of beans and rice and good cooking. But it was also – it was humbling. I mean, I saw my dad sometimes leave really early to work if I was up, or he was working the night shift and I didn't see him. There's times I definitely didn't see him, and then my mom doing the same thing. When we moved to Fontana from Maywood – it's kind of more where my memory sticks. When I was 9, they were still driving to L.A. to work. So that's, you know, an hour and a half drive to 2 hours depending on traffic. So they're gone by 4 or 5 in the morning. And it was me and my siblings who'd make breakfast, get to school, get on the bus or walk wherever we had to go to school. We had to figure it out. So it was definitely middle class, lower middle class and, you know, hard work and get it done.
So you mentioned that you're the youngest. So how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older brother and older sister. So it's just it's the three of us, my brother Alex and my sister Andrea.
So let's go back. When you were a baby, you developed an eye infection, and your mom had given you some eye drops that cleared up the infection. But it actually, in your left eye, for the most part, you're blind in your left eye. Is that correct? Take us through that story and what type of trial that was.
Yeah. So, again, this is coming from my mom. So, she, I mean, this is what I got from her is I was a baby. I had, like, kind of the, like the eye boogers you get every morning, you know, that wake-up stuff. And it just kind of covered my eye when I was a baby. She tried different things, different methods. Doctor said, hey, here's some drops, but there could be some side effects. It's up to you. She decided to use them. It cleared it up. The side effect was I have bad vision. And I didn't know I had bad vision, obviously, until I was getting glasses. And my glasses, it was only one side that was thick and one side that was normal. And then that's when I found out. I was like, oh, okay, I can't see out of that eye.
So what type of trials, because you said it's kind of the way that you really remember everything. That's really all you know. How difficult was that for you, say, in school? And obviously sports clearly played a role in your life. How did that affect those aspects?
I think it was more socially. You know, growing up, you know, you get made fun of if you have glasses, right? But also, my mom tried different methods. I wore a patch on my good eye to strengthen my bad eye. So I was like a pirate for six Halloweens in a row.
You know, because work with what you got, right?
I had to work with what I got, and she just took a Sharpie or marker and colored that thing in, and I was a pirate. So, you know, the social aspect of it and being made fun of and things like that. But as far as school and grades and the everyday life, I never thought I had an issue. It was just I wore glasses. But other than that, I didn't see it as a problem at all.
Okay, so let's talk about the baseball. When did baseball or sports in general, at what point did that enter your life?
5 years old. My dad was a basketball player growing up in Mexico, and he loved sports. But he wanted to instill baseball into me and my brother. It was just – I think his passion for it. He loves baseball. He loves all sports, but baseball was one of those things where he was like, "Hey, like this, let's do this." Obviously, it's big in the culture. Growing up in Southern California, Fernando Valenzuela was a big deal in the '80s. You know, that's one baseball player that I could say I didn't idolize, but I was like, "Hey, he's brown, he's Mexican, he's left-handed. I could be that guy."
Yeah.
Right. So I think my dad always instilled that in me. And it was just a work ethic. It was from five all the way, obviously, till now that baseball's still part of my life.
Well, and for those that, you know, have played baseball, especially younger, you kind of play everything. And then as you get older, it becomes more specialized. When did focusing on the pitching side of it work for you or change for you?
Well, my dad, one, didn't let me play another sport, which was upsetting because I loved basketball. I wanted to try football, American football, and that didn't work out. But I think I want to say it was probably like 9, 10 years old where I figured out I could kind of pitch, or like coaches say, he could throw strikes. You know, at that age, you know, my son's 8 right now and trying to teach him to pitch, I couldn't do it. It's like you just have to play catch. And I think that's one thing that I realized at 19 years old, I could play catch and hit someone in the chest pretty easily. And pitching became part of my life then.
Okay, so I want to go back to the vision thing then. As a pitcher, there's so many things that you got to do. Sometimes you look out of the corner of your eye. So how did you maneuver through that?
Well, one, thank God, you know, I was left-handed. I was born left-handed. Or else I wouldn't be able to pitch right-handed. I didn't figure out the whole head situation until I got to high school and college on picks to second. So I'm left-handed, and if I turn my head, I cannot use my peripherals to see second, where we teach guys now. It's like use your peripherals. You don't have to turn your full head. I had to turn my full head and be able to look at second base. So that's when I found out, like, oh, this is going to be a little bit of a struggle on picks to second and things like that. But that wasn't until high school where I noticed it being a problem.
So when you were living in Fontana, your home actually got robbed twice. Tell us about that experience and how that kind of shaped things at that time.
Yeah, that was a tough experience. Kind of leads into kind of relationships with my brother and things like that. This is all based off some things that my brother, you know, getting with the bad people and bad crowd and things like that. So growing up in Fontana, we were going to travel to Mexico for Thanksgiving. It was kind of every year. You know, you get on the 10 and you go east, and we go to where my mom grew up in Agua Prieta. It happened every year, either Thanksgiving or Christmas. So my brother was with some bad people, and he had a debt or something. This is now later that I'm finding this out. He had a debt, and he couldn't pay the debt, so they robbed. My brother was home alone. I was at school. We're all at school. Everybody's out of the house except for my brother. And they come in. They rob the place. They tell it, you know, and they go. My dad kind of confronts my brother. We're all upset. And the people come back because they're essentially friends of my brother. And my dad's like, "What? You know, like, why take it all on us? This, you know." And they tell him, "Well, he had to pay a debt, and you guys paid the debt." So we're shook. Obviously, I think I was maybe freshman in high school when this happened. But we still take the trip. And when we take the trip, obviously they come back and they ransack the house. And we come back to a house that's, I don't even know, it's just a disaster. We don't feel safe, and we kind of get out of that house. We still stay in the same city, but we go to a different part of the city. So that was just a tough time. I think more tough for my parents because they were struggling financially. My mom, who was a cosmetologist, tried to open up her own shop. It didn't work out. I don't talk to my parents about finances and stuff like that, but I'm sure they went bankrupt at some point. It was just a horrible time, you know, growing up. You know, I was wearing hand-me-downs because I didn't have any clothes. We had to go get new clothes. I was in high school. You know, it's a whole social aspect of it.
Absolutely.
And having to go through that where it was like, all right, you know, it happened. I got to get past it. But it was definitely a tough time, to have a relationship with my brother and understand what was going on in his life. But it's something that's happened, and it's unfortunately happened to me multiple times when I was younger. When we lived in Maywood, it happened. I don't remember that, but my parents told me, you know, they got house got broken, jewels got taken. It happened to me when I was in AAA and living in a neighborhood with a buddy of mine, and we went on a trip. We came back. Our apartment was broken into, and then it happened to me in a condo I bought in Long Beach. Where wow. I got back from pro ball and I got robbed. It was kind of interesting that it happened to me in different phases, different learning points, obviously, as well. But yeah, that time in high school with my parents probably was the toughest.
Was athletics sort of an outlet to just sort of put some of that stuff away, not to think about some of that stuff right now? Did the athletic side of things help you to be able to focus on some other things?
I'd say yes and no. Obviously, when you're on the field, you're on the field. And I did do a good job of that. There's different times I struggled with it. But I did do a good job, especially in high school and college. I'm pitching. And I think that's one of the craziest things that my wife always tells me. She's like, "You hate the spotlight, but you're a pitcher." I was like, yeah, but I liked the competition. Yeah. So it was a way for me not to think about something, especially when the ball was in my hand.
We were talking before we started the podcast, and you were saying that, you know, the possibility of going to college and all that stuff, that really wasn't on your radar. You were just playing sports because you like to play sports. And then you realize, wait a minute, I'm pretty good at this, and this could take me places. When did you realize I could go far with this?
It was definitely high school. I was playing, what's it called, pony or colt or something. And one of my buddies' dad was a freshman coach at the high school. I ended up going to A.B. Miller in Fontana. And he said, "Abe, you should go to this school. Like, this will be – I mean, I lived in the neighborhood. I was like, my siblings went to that school. I am going to go to that school." But, you know, the fact that someone was watching me when I was 13 – even though he was just a parent and he kind of saw talent, and then getting into high school and getting called up my freshman year to pitch in a tournament on the varsity team. That's when I kind of figured out, like, I think I'm actually kind of good at this thing. My sophomore year going to Arizona State camp with my coach driving me and my dad, and them trying to offer me and get me to sign as a sophomore. It kind of blew my mind at the time. And that's when I knew, okay, I was like, okay, I could, I could play college sports. You know, the dream of every kid, obviously, let's play in the big leagues. Let's do it. I still had that dream, but to me it was just a dream. And kind of doing that and finding out my sophomore year, I was pretty good. Kind of that dream started like, oh, okay, this is more than a dream.
The recruiting process will always be different for each individual athlete. What was it like for you? And ultimately, where'd you land?
The recruiting process was quiet at for some reason, but at the same time busy because it was just me. My parents speak English, but they couldn't keep conversations still. You know, they're better now. But, you know, when coaches showed up at your door, you know, the UCR, the, you know, Arizona State, Long Beach State, you know, and they come and say, hey, trying to talk to my parents. My parents looking at me. I'm translating it, but at the same time, it's like it's your decision. It was quiet. I really only took one official trip, and that was to Long Beach State, and that's where I chose to go. It was the best. It was close to home, and it was the best fit for me. It definitely was different than kind of what the process is now with kids. But at the same time, it was humbling because I was able to achieve something that no one in my family had been able to achieve before.
Well, and you did a lot of winning at Long Beach. You went to a really good program. What was that experience like?
It was probably one of the best decisions of my life overall, of what shaped me as a baseball player, but also who I am today. I had great, unbelievable coaches, great, unbelievable teammates, and obviously friends that I'll have for a lifetime. It was amazing. It was an amazing experience. It was also bad experience when you lost every single time in the regionals or super regionals to the same school. But at the same time, it's something I'll never regret making that decision. It was just great. I can't even put into words just how much that school means to me.
What did the 2003 season? Correct me if I'm wrong. It was 2003. You were the Big West Pitcher of the Year, second team All American. You helped your team to the Super Regional. What did that season in particular mean to you?
Well, I wanted to get us to the Omaha, obviously, because we had an unbelievable team. Me and Jared Weaver were 1-2. Cesar Ramos was our third. He also made the big leagues. It was one of those things where I knew the draft. You know, kind of it was my draft year, and I knew that was coming. And there was pressure, and I was a leader. I was never a leader with words, but I was a leader with work ethic and what I wanted to do. And so I just wanted to prove to myself that I could be one of the best in the country and help my team in Omaha. And we're close enough. We ran into a juggernaut of Stanford with the team they had. But I think I was able to do everything I wanted to do besides get to Omaha.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to get into what was next for you. And what is next is Major League Baseball. So we'll get into that as we continue our conversation with Abe Alvarez, pitching coach for the BYU baseball team. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll have more Deep Blue after this on BYU Radio. Welcome back to Deep Blue. My name is Jason Shepherd. Happy to have my friend Abe Alvarez, pitching coach for the BYU baseball team, here joining me today. I'm talking about his upbringing, talking about his high school career and then his college career. And now we get to the point after 2003 at Long Beach State, you're drafted 49th, and not 49th round. We're talking 49th overall by the Boston Red Sox. And you ended up making a historic run in their system. What was it like, first and foremost, to be drafted and then to realize you're going to the Boston Red Sox?
Amazing. I mean, being drafted and knowing that the dream that you had as a five-year-old is going to come, not necessarily the big leagues, but you're going to be a professional baseball player. The fact that that's going to happen is amazing. How it happened, the story is great. We're obviously in the regionals or going into the super regionals. We're all out of the dorms or our apartment because the lease is up. So the school puts us in a hotel. We're on a hotel like we're on the road. And back then, there was no – I mean, there was internet, but it wasn't like the draft was not on Major League Network and things like that. So I'm in my hotel room with my roommate, and I'm looking at my watch because we got practice at like 2 o'clock or whatever. It may be in the morning because there's no school. And I'm like, all right, we got to go. Get in my car. But Troy Tulowitzki, who's a freshman on the team, he's like, hey, I got it on the computer. You got to come watch. I was like, we got to get to practice, Troy. Like, Tulo, like, let's go. I jump in my car with my roommate. Or actually, I think I'm by myself. And I'm making the turn into the our practice facility at Long Beach State practice field. And I get a call from my advisor, my agent at the time. And he says, Abe, you just been drafted in the second round by the Boston Red Sox. And I was like, say that again. And he's like, yeah, you're 49th overall pick by the Boston Red Sox. And I was like, whoa. I was like, okay. I was like, what's next? He's like, I'll let you know. And I was like, all right, I got to go to practice. We got Stanford this weekend. You know, was,
on to the next. I'm a pro ball player, but hey, we got to go to practice.
Yeah, I mean, the goal was still Omaha at the time. Just because that's where I was at. I try to be, you know, where my feet are as much as I can. But I get to the field, and everybody already knows. And Coach Weathers and Coach Buckley, who are the coaches, are like, congratulations. But it was like, all right, we got practice. You know, that's later.
What did your mom and dad think about you being drafted? What kind of a moment was that for them?
I don't remember crying. I don't think my dad cried, but my mom probably cried. But my dad was just over the moon, and I think it was a big deal for me to do that for him. It was a necessary – even though it was my dream, it was more of my dad raised me right. He pushed me the right way. He made sure I was at practice. He didn't make me miss. All the work that he did on the back end was now like, yeah, there it is, kind of moment for me to see, and for him, I think, to kind of take in. The moment I actually pitched in the big leagues kind of was, you know, all of it put together.
Well, and we'll get to that in a second, but I mentioned that you made a historic leap in the minors. You went from single A to the big leagues. How did that happen? Take me through that story.
Well, short A, which they don't have anymore. I was in short A. Most of the college players go there, and my innings were up. So I probably pitched like 9 innings, I believe, my first season overall, maybe 19 or something like that, under 20. And it was more of a, hey, get you acclimated to pro ball. And then what was wild was I didn't even go into really low A or single. I didn't play really single A ball. I jumped right to double A. In my first full season.
Yeah.
And I think that was incredible even for me, being in spring training. And you go to the boards and they usually start putting your names where you might end up. And I just saw my name in double A. And I was like, I'm playing with, you know, 22-year-olds, 24, like guys that have been playing pro ball for about 4 or 5 seasons already. And this is my first year, which I thought was amazing. And then from double A, I was having a pretty good year. Not great, but I was having a pretty good year. And there's rumblings of, hey, there's a doubleheader. They're going to call someone up, you know. And I had local guys on my double A team at the time, and they were listening to, you know, Boston Sports Radio, which is those people, they know everything. And he's like, come to the locker room and be like, Abe, your name was mentioned. Your name was mentioned. I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, right. I mean, I'm 20 years old. I mean, it's like, come on. And then no doubt, Coach Johnson, Ron Johnson, who was my manager, great man. He calls me in. We're on the road in Connecticut. And he says, hey, you're going to the big leagues. And you're pitching in the first game on doubleheader on Thursday. I think this was like a Monday. And I can't believe it. He's like, you can't tell anybody. I was like, what are you talking about? I can't tell anybody.
The biggest news I've ever had, and I have to keep it quiet.
But obviously Boston radio, yeah. Rumors fly and this and that. So I don't know. He's like, yeah, Abe has to go home, something. And Thursday, they drive me up to Boston, and I'm in Boston.
I've got to imagine anybody that's in that situation and gets that, one of two things happens. Number one, it either just boosts your confidence immensely that you had put in the work to be put in that position, or it's so overwhelming the stress would just kill you. Which one was it for you?
I think it was kind of both. it was obviously, okay, I did it. But at the same time, it's, I think the harder part was that they told me on Monday, but I wasn't pitching until Tuesday.
Oh.
Thursday.
So you had to sit and stew in that.
Yes. And I had to go, be in Boston, be in a hotel in Boston. I had to sneak in into Fenway and play catch so I could still play catch and then sneak out before all the rest of the players show up and the fans show up. I think that was the harder part instead of like, hey, you're called up, you're pitching tomorrow. Like that would have been easier. The stress of it was I'm here, but I'm not here. And then I know I'm pitching.
Yeah.
I think that was more of a stressful part. But the excitement of it when you find out, it's like, you know, mom, dad, get on a flight, probably a flight that they've never been on a flight to the East Coast. And this is the first time, but it's like, you got to come.
So mom and dad were there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was my one request to the Red Sox that they fly out my parents.
Wow. So what was the moment like? Not only are you making your major league debut, but you're at Fenway Park, one of the most historic stadiums in all of sports. What was the moment like?
Amazing. I mean, it's hot summer night or summer day, which was bad too because I sweat and I'm like ready to change the jersey and stuff like that. And my heart's pumping and my level's high, so I felt, you know, I got warm too fast. And you start thinking about other things, and but you take in the moment. You walk out to the bullpen and you just take in the moment. Like these people know who you are. They're yelling from the stands, Alvarez, go get him. You know, like they're pumped up for you. And I think that's what made it special. The people, you know, in New England in that area, you know, Red Sox fans know everything. They'll tell you the truth. They'll back you up. They'll tell you when you're not good too. And
really, I've never heard that about them.
And it was just amazing because I'm a West Coast kid.
Yeah.
I'm a Dodgers fan. As Dodgers fans, we're not really into the farm system. Wait till you get to the big leagues. But over there, they knew everybody from the draft till you made the show. And I think that was amazing that they knew that and they support you throughout anything.
So how'd you do?
Five and dive, gave up five runs, lost 5-3. It was a loss. I understood what a big league strike zone was to a rookie. that's for sure because even Veritek, who caught me, and Dave Wallace, who was a pitch coach, they even came out and they're like, I don't know what you're doing. And Dave Wallace got into it with the home umpire and during the game. And I was like, I'm just pitching.
Just doing my thing.
Just trying to get outs.
Yeah.
And you know, I figured out, yeah, you got to be a veteran to get certain pitches.
Well, you could not have picked a better year to be involved with the Boston Red Sox. And look, Abe, this just goes to show how much I like you that I'm gonna get into this. Because as a St. Louis Cardinals fan, we know who the Red Sox beat in the World Series that year. So that one hurt. It hurt a lot. But what a year to be part of the Boston Red Sox. What was that experience like, winning the World Series after that long?
Yeah, my experience is different because
sure.
I didn't make the World Series roster.
Right.
I didn't make the playoff roster. It was kind of a come up, get a shot, all right, go back down, figure it out, and we'll see what we can do. But just watching as a fan and being part of the organization and knowing people in the organization and kind of what it's about, it was amazing. Because the previous year I was in 2003, I was in Instrux League down in Florida, and I'm flying home for my cousin's wedding, and it's like game six, and Boone hits that home run off of Wakefield.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, that's tough. And I'm like, oh, as a part of being that organization, and then to be in the big leagues the next year myself and then see them do it and be part of the organization, it was just, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, wow, I'm part of this.
Yeah.
I was there with those guys on that field for a day, and now they're doing this. It was completely amazing.
So I'm not sure how all of this works. Did you receive a World Series ring as well?
I did. I have one.
Now, is that because that you did pitch in the majors, or would you have gotten it even if you had not been called up? How does all that work? I'm not 100% sure how that usually goes.
The way I found out, I was in spring training. Obviously, I was in big league spring training the following year because I was now on the 40-man roster. And I was sitting in spring training. I'm hanging out with other minor league guys that are, got, you know, had gotten called up and are there. And one of them, Lenny DiNardo, who works for the Red Sox now, he's a great, great guy. He says, "Hey, go, you know, you got to go get fitted." I was like, "Fitted for what?" I was like, "Your ring." I was like, "Okay, pulling my leg. Okay, rookie. You know, you're gonna get got." And then Alan Embry and the Tim Lynn, those older guys who are really kind of really good guys in the bullpen, they're like, "No, Abe, it's true. Go get fitted." Walk into the room and I'm like, "All right," and try it on and this and that. And it was humbling because the Red Sox didn't have to do that, but it was owner's decision and the player's decision to allow anybody who got called up throughout the year, whether they played or didn't, got a World Series ring. So I was one of the lucky ones who actually got to play in a game. But there's guys who got rings who were just called up maybe for like 3 days and didn't get to play, and they're still able to get a ring. So hats off to the Red Sox for doing that.
So it wasn't the last time, though, that you pitched for Boston. You pitched in a couple more games in 2005 and in 2006. But you spent most of the time in the minor leagues. You ended up playing some independent ball as well over in Italy, I believe.
Correct.
So what was the remainder of your professional career like?
It was tough, obviously, as a pitcher. There's many of us, and there's always someone coming up behind you. Obviously, I was not a velocity pitcher, and back then we didn't have the technology we have now and different things probably I could have done to gotten myself better. But it was a grind. There's a lot of things off the field that were affecting me as well. And just trying to stay afloat, staying in AAA, getting the calls up. 05 was actually pretty good. I had some success. 06 was my last time. It was in Philadelphia and came in for an injury, and that was tough. The ball flies in Philly. And then after that, it was like, okay, you know, I got hurt. Made some mistakes off the field that affected me, and it was like, all right, you got to go. You know, and playing independent ball was tough just because of what you know baseball it is, and do I want to do this and do this grind for the rest of my life or for long I can. And the choice to go to Italy was kind of cool. It was kind of like this is it kind of deal. But that was a lot of fun overall.
When the time came for you to make that decision, am I going to continue to go down this route or am I going to switch course a little bit? How difficult of a decision was that for you to essentially hang up the cleats in terms of your pitching and in your playing days?
It's hard. I mean, I think the hard part about it is the competition and wanting the ball and thinking you still have it, I think was kind of the tough point. I remember my wife, we drove up to Oakland, and there was an independent league in California, and I was like, I'm just going to try one more time. And I was ready. I trained. I felt good about the whole situation. And I'm like the sixth guy up to pitch, and it starts pouring rain about two guys before me. And I'm like, okay, something's up. Like, this is time. This is God's telling me, like, you've had enough. You got to go do something else. So it was tough kind of figuring that out. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, it's time. God's telling me something. It's time to do something else.
What role – you've mentioned God a few times during the interview. What role did religion play in your life growing up?
I was raised Catholic. My mom was a devout Catholic. We're in Mass. I was an altar server, you know, baptized, communion. I did all my sacraments. I have all my sacraments except for the last one. It was just a thing at home. You know, it's part of my faith and part of the culture, being, you know, Mexican culture strong in the Catholic faith. And I owe my mom a lot for instilling that in me. My dad wasn't as devout, but at the same time, he did push me with other things and understand being a man of the house and things like that. So faith is number one. I want to say it's always been number one. I have made some mistakes in my life and things like that, but I've always been brought back to that, mm-hmm. from my mom to now my wife, who is my stronghold and my faith that has developed everything that I am now.
What role did your faith and your belief in God help you in terms of making that switch? Because ultimately you decided to get into coaching and teaching. What role did that – how much did you rely on your faith in trying to figure out what was next and ultimately led you to making that decision?
It was 100% everything. I mean, I knew the one thing about baseball in my life, I wanted to be a big leaguer. I did it. I was able to do it. I didn't do it how I wanted to do it, but I did it. But in high school, I made a decision. Plan B was to be a high school teacher and coach. And I had a great teacher, history teacher in high school. And I was like, I could do that. And I think I could coach baseball. I didn't know at the point, you know, that I was going to do that. But it led me to St. Bernard, which is a Catholic high school in West LA. And it was probably, I was there for 6 years, I believe. And that was inspirational, just overall how you can help young men and women get closer to their faith, because actually more than 50, maybe 50% of the kids that went to that school were Catholic, mm-hmm. maybe less. There's Baptists, there's just different, but they're a Christian. And the fact that I could talk about my life, I could talk about my faith, I could talk about my struggles, you know, with life and how I was down but how I got back up. That was a big deal, because I think even though I was helping those kids realize what their future holds, I was also answering some questions for myself as far as who I wanted to be and what I was trying to make for myself. Because during those 6 years I had, you know, I was married. At my daughter, we had our son, and before I got back into college sports. So there was a lot of, I want to say growing up, but there was a lot of faith formation in those years.
Well, and you led that team to its first league title in, I think, 30 years, and you took them to the state tournament in back-to-back years. So not only was it gratifying in terms of maybe your overall life and things that were going on in that, you know, situation, but you had a lot of success. And that was probably rewarding for you just as much.
Absolutely. It gave me confidence that I could coach, that I knew I was taught by the right coaches in high school and in college to understand what it took to be a good baseball player, but also to kind of lead a team. And it gave me the confidence to essentially take the next step and get into college baseball.
It was before last season BYU was looking for a new pitching coach. A new assistant coach position was open. How did BYU come into your life?
Trent called me and we're out both recruiting, and he's like, hey, you know, let's sit down, let's have lunch. I just kind of want to know who you are. And meeting Trent and kind of understanding what he was about kind of gauged my interest into, okay, what is BYU and what it's about and kind of what the program's about. So it gauged my interest 100% just by meeting Trent and kind of the person he was and the conversations we had. And I was like, I think this is the place, but obviously there's other schools involved. And just sitting down and praying with my wife and kind of going through that process and saying, you know, God will lead us to where we need to go, and BYU ended up being the place.
I remember before you had been hired, but before I got a chance to meet you, and I remember talking with a couple of the coaches, and I just remember saying, this guy, they told me he's a perfect fit. He's not a member of the church, but he fits perfectly here. And what – obviously BYU is associated with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Was there any concern on your part as a member of a different faith to come to BYU? What was that type of conversation like between you and your wife and even your inner thoughts?
Yeah, I think like everybody, you know, I didn't go down a rabbit hole, but – other people, you know, it's other people's opinions always like, well, be careful with this and be careful with that. And me and my wife were like, well, we're not there yet. We don't know it. I talked to Coach Kindenberg, who was at Utah, mm-hmm. Who's good friends with my college coach, Coach Weathers, who also coached at Utah. I totally forgot. And just kind of asked him, like, you know, what's the experience, even though you're at a different school and this and that. And, you know, his kids actually went to the school where my kids go to school now, over by Juan Diego, St. John the Baptist. So it was just asking the right people, and kind of who's that Colorado Pueblo? I forget the school, but I called him, mm-hmm. and he was not a member of the faith. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "What is?" He's like, "Abe, you're fine." I was like, "What do you believe?" He's like, "What do you believe in?" I was like, you know, I'm Catholic, raised Catholic, but, you know, go to Christian church sometimes, but I believe in Jesus Christ. He's like, you'll be fine. And kind of talking more to the right people, and then getting here and kind of, okay, it's baseball. And that's one thing Trent's really good at. He's like, Abe, it's baseball. Abe, you're a believer. You'll be fine. And not worried about what the wrong people were saying.
I'm so excited to see you and the rest of the staff and this team in this upcoming season. It's so exciting to be in the Big 12 and to have all these opportunities in front of this program. It's a program that I hold dear to my heart. So first and foremost, thank you so much for doing this. It's always good to talk to you. Thanks for coming in and doing this. It was fun.
Yeah, no problem, Shep. Anytime we could do it again, I'll be happy to.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks once again to my guest, Abe Alvarez. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.